Welcome to the Elks Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into the running back tiers here. So we're looking at running backs really on a one-year window. This is basically guys that are either coming up on a contract or that have really high threat rates is really the best way to describe them. So guys that could move up, I think there's a lot of uncertainty in this range. And again, I could even say that I'm not even sure two guys belong in this tier. So, you know, we'll see how this offseason presents for some of these guys. This might be aspirational. We'll talk about that. This might be a floor where they go up, and this could be the end for one of them, maybe. So we'll have to see the arc here. All right, so let's just start here. We'll go with DeAndre Swift. I find him really interesting because you look at him a couple of different ways. If you sort of blind tested it, 3 years, three top 24 hits, 24 years old, 75% dynamic density, you're probably like, all right, like we'll take that. You know, that's something we could build on. But at this point in his career, you feel nothing but let down by really what his cost has been and what his production has been. So 99 touches or 99 carries this past year. I'm not even sure how it's possible he finished running back 21. He was essentially a third running back behind Jamal Williams and Justin Jackson for a pretty significant period of time. So I find his offseason to be an interesting one. I think one way that I would think about his offseason would be maybe there's a lot of opportunity. Maybe there is a lot of opportunity for him to, you know, get on a better footing. I'd point to maybe two specific things. The first one, Jamal Williams, a free agent. Second one, his running back coach departed. I believe he's in Carolina now, Deuce Staley. So you could say, hey, listen, work environment wasn't great, didn't get along with coach, gave opportunities to other guys. But, you know, he wasn't too worried about pedigree, yada, yada. And Jamal Williams played really well. And, heck, maybe Jamal Williams isn't back. I think that's probably your positive case for DeAndre Swift in terms of, like, hey, this is how he can really turn around and make a big difference. I think the other way you could say this is, like, look, he's kind of been handed a pretty good situation. And that has basically coasted him to, you know, that's essentially coasted him to a running back, a top 24 finish each of the seasons, but he's basically disappointed the whole way through, right? 13 games, 13 games, 14 games. So, you know, I think you can look at him a couple of different ways. This was his worst rushing carry season with only 99 carries. However, he did catch 48 passes for 389 yards, right? 70 targets. Yeah, I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at him, right? You can certainly say, okay, this is a player who in 14 games was the 12th most receptions and frankly didn't even play that much, right? And if you sort of extrapolate that out and say, all right, if he kind of plays a full role, is he got Christian McCaffrey's upside in his range of outcomes? Like, I mean, that's 85 catches, right? I mean, if he was a full-time player, that wouldn't be a necessarily unreasonable, if he was a full-time player playing well, it wouldn't necessarily be an unreasonable thing for him, okay? However, when you start looking at some of his stats, you feel a little bit less confident in that, right? 236 routes this year. It was actually his best in yards per route run. So I think there's a couple of ways I could think about this. You know, he's been largely a letdown, but B, he's heading into a contract season, right? Is going to want to get paid, is going to be incentivized to be ready to go, and is a player on a per route basis, sixth in yards per route run. Guys ahead of him were actually Derrick Henry, I can't believe I said that out loud, Breece Hall, Christian McCaffrey, Nyheim Hines, Alvin Kamara, Swift, and Swift's right there with Eckler, right? And then it's Pollard, McKinnon. So, like, that's one where you could look at it and really say, like, okay, like, that's pretty enticing. And then you look and say, all right, his 236 routes ranked 30th, right? And you could sort of say, all right, well, those ranked 30th, but he ranked 10th in targets. Okay, so is it volume? Yes. What's the volume attributable to? Well, the volume's attributable to the fact that he struggled to stay healthy. But when he's been healthy, he's been fairly good. So I'm in a bit of a conundrum in terms of how you value that. I think you have to understand that that's the case. There's only so low you can go with him, right? You can't, it's really tough to justify going, you know, I could justify taking Derrick Henry ahead of him. I wouldn't, but I could justify it. And then after that, like, it's hard to start taking those guys ahead of Swift because Swift is still on the younger side. We still know that he had a really elite profile coming in. He hasn't lived up to it, but I think a lot of that's been he hasn't gotten a full opportunity playing time-wise. Some of that's certainly injuries. Some of that can be, can be on him, right? Is he fully prepared? You know, all those things, right? I'm not going to play psychologist, but right, there's multiple reasons why he cannot be on the field. So we're left with this real dichotomy of what kind of to do with him. I think if you look at his price, you know, it's 46 overall in Superflex. It's running back 12. Again, after him, Javonte Williams, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Delvin Cook, Dobbins, Tony Pollard, Kamara, Aaron Jones, Damian Pierce. You're taking Swift ahead of all of those guys. Right? Do you want to take Swift or Nick Chubb, who's 3 years older? Do you want to take Swift or Ramondre Stevenson? Right? Like, I'm not even going to force feed an answer to you on those. I would take Swift ahead of Chubb. If you wanted to take Stevenson over him, I think there's a fair argument there. Just from a on the field perspective. So I think your answer to this is kind of like, okay, well, I am not paying a Jonathan Taylor type price. I find it interesting he's still the running back two from that class, right? Jonathan Taylor and then him. Which for a long time was what it was coming in. It's actually held out to be true through a number of machinations. But you look, basically after 3 years, they're back kind of where they were entering the NFL, you know, before they were actually drafted, which I think is probably, of course, small sample size, but telling. Again, you look at 60% of round two running backs hit for a top 24 season, about that. It's like 55, 56, 60% sort of in that range, depending on where you sort of cut it off. Go back to that class. Taylor, Swift, Dylan. 3 out of 5. And that was supposed to be like a legendary running back class. And I should dig up some of the tweets and be like, one of these guys is going to be really good. One of them's going to kind of feel a disappointment. One of them's going to get hurt. And one of them's going to be like, I'm not really sure. You know, like that's kind of the way you feel about that class, right? And so just sort of think about that when you're thinking about classes, right? If there's five round two running backs this year, I'm not even sure that's going to happen. But if there is, and everyone's sort of excited about it, just kind of keep in mind like that base rate and just go back to that year, right? Because I think that's an interesting one. So I think Swift's rightly the right is the most expensive bet here. I think that that's all fair. Again, I think it's what do you value, right? I think I value the upside. I think it's there. It exists, right? He's still good on a per route basis, for example. And if he ever got, you know, top 10 volume, I think he could do a lot of damage. The question is, A, can he hold up? And B, has he fallen out of favor? Right? He was playing running back 3 behind Justin Jackson, Jamal Williams. That ain't good. So he's, my joke for a good chunk of the season was he's the most expensive running back 3 in Dynasty. It was only a joke because it was like funny and because it was true, you know? So that's, that's where you find yourself, right? That's where you find yourself with him. So I think it's an interesting sort of risk reward bet. I don't think you you know, if he sort of does what he did this year, I don't think you, you know, I don't think it loses you your league, but can he win you your league from there? Like, he could be a running back that hits from deep. And you start thinking about, you know, I start thinking about this from the perspective of, all right, we know that it's really uncommon for guys to hit twice. So let's strip out the guys who have hit once, and you're taking out Taylor, McCaffrey, and Eckler. And then you start thinking, okay, like, after that, you know, who hits for a running back one finish? And so after that, sort of, who would you put on the list? Barkley's probably on the list. You know, Jacobs was close this year. Etienne's probably on the list. Maybe Najee Harris. It's Swift is probably on that list. So Stevenson, I would think, at like an absolute ceiling perspective, he could get there. But Swift has the, you know, 80 catches, touchdown a game type range of outcomes. Probably looking a little bit more Eckler-ish than, say, Josh Jacobs-ish, right? If you sort of look at them, that's probably what his success looks like. So I think he's probably on the list, and I think you got to be interested in that at the cost. Again, it'd be interesting if we could sort of explore some more of these. Like, can you move from Dobbins to Swift, like, and do that cheaply? Right, that would be a move to make. Like, can you almost anyone in that 20s range, can you sort of slide up to Swift? I'm interested in doing that. Or teens, that outside basically 12, right? Javonte Williams is after that. And then really from that point on, Henry, Mixon, Cook, Dobbins, you know, Kamara, Pollard might be a little bit different. Aaron Jones, can you use that to slide up to DeAndre Swift? I'm not sure how that trade looks because you're going old to young, but I think it's a worthwhile thing to consider, especially as part of a bigger deal. Because I think he does have the ceiling. And again, how far is he going to fall, really? Like, what are you losing by selecting him there, other than taking a wide receiver, taking a tight end or quarterback in a startup draft? Like, the running backs beyond him, you're not losing a ton, to be totally honest with you. So that's kind of how I view the position, right? So if you can use him as a consolidation point, sort of get up into the top 12, that's like a stopping off point. And then, you know, maybe you can pivot, maybe you ride him out, you know, maybe you, like, again, I think he's got high ceiling. It just doesn't give me like a warm and cozy feeling. So that's the kind of the deal with Swift. Dobbins, no hit through three seasons. Running back 17, this feels absolutely crazy, especially when you juxtapose it against Cam Akers, who's running back 28. They're very similar profiles. Like, I don't think Cam Akers has a huge receiving ceiling. It's probably bigger than Dobbins's, but, you know, I don't love either player, so I'd much rather take Cam Akers at running back 28 than J.K. Dobbins at 17. Running back 17. I mean, that is a difference of 37. It's three rounds, startup draft valuation. I'd much rather take that bet. But so I think Akers, if you were to sort of look at it, again, he's got one where you're like, well, I don't even know what to do with this profile, right? I don't even know, like, what's the comp for guys basically told to stay away. Then he gets brought back in after the trade deadline. No one's interested in him. Literally doesn't have a market. Reconciles with the coach and then performs excellent down the stretch. Like, give me the comp for that. I don't know. I don't have a great one. Right? There's not one coming to mind where that's super common. So I guess the thing that I would say about him is, hey, he ended really well, and maybe that sort of sets up for him to have a better season, right? And given the context of which his season occurred, like, that's he's on a positive trajectory. He was banged up, he was injured, all that stuff, and he's got now really a full season. You know, he's got a full extra season of recovery, all that stuff. Maybe he can recover some of his juice. I mean, that's the argument that you make for him. And then you say, all right, down the stretch, he was excellent, really, from week, we'll say from week 15 through week 17, he was in the real dark greens of PFF grades, for example, right? I mean, that was really well done by him down the stretch. You know, and after that trade deadline, came back and had double-digit carries from week 11 on. From week 13 on. He had from week 11 on, he had all but one double-digit carries. He had only 8 carries against Kansas City. I believe that was more game script, if memory serves. So you look at that, like, all right, that's pretty, you know, that's actually pretty encouraging. And, you know, that's heading in the right direction, especially given he was coming off the Achilles and all that stuff. So I'm encouraged by him at that cost. I'm hard out on Dobbins. I'd arb that down. Like, that's an efficiency that's probably going to end up closing, I would imagine, pretty aggressively, here over the – you know, over the off season. And when you look, even if you go over to Underdog, for example, just grabbing it here, Dobbins is at running back 23, Cam Akers is at 27. So again, there's no reason to have that big of a gap between the two of them, you know, with very little allegiance. Like, there's no reason to have that gap. So Dobbins overvalued, Akers probably undervalued at this cost. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is really the last one. And by the way, Underdog has DeAndre Swift at running back 15, which feels appropriate. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the last one in this tier from that class, you know, from the elite guys of that class. I don't mean to say that he's elite, but of the highly drafted guys in that class, right? Round one, round two guys. It's funny when you look at his profile and you just sort of look at his PFF numbers, it's strikingly the same throughout his career. Like, he hasn't really changed. 4.4 yards per carry as a rookie, 4.3 as a second-year guy, 4.2. Right? He had a really good rookie season in terms of PFF grade, but it was basically the same the past 2 years. This year, he was actually really good at yards after contact. It was his best of his career. Broke tackles at a really high rate. You know, had his biggest breakaway percentage of yardage. Like, you know, had some explosive tendencies actually in there as well. Yards per route run was actually the best of his career. So you look at all that and you're like, okay, well, where is he? Well, buried behind Isaiah Pacheco. Some of that's injuries, right? Some of that's probably a disappointment, right? If you drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the 7th round of the NFL draft, you're probably super excited about how he's performed to date. You draft him at the 32nd pick of the 2020 draft class, and you're disappointed, right? I mean, it's a matter of perspective on him. I think you're going to have to kind of discount at this point his pedigree, but I would remind you that that stuff is sticky, right? He's well behind the density track at this point. I would throw a third at him. I don't know if that gets it done, but I would entertain that. I would entertain ways of potentially shopping him in a move down. You know, when you look, Austin Hooper and a 2 tight end, that seems too expensive. I mean, Edwards-Helaire and Khalil Herbert were traded for Brian Robinson in season. A third, a fourth, and Teddy Bridgewater. Again, are you even really buying low? I don't know. You're throwing a quarterback in there who could be a potential week one starter in a deal like that. That's not how I would do it. Again, there hasn't been a ton of volume on him either. So it feels like a pretty dead marketplace, probably because no one's buying into him. I mean, I'm throwing out thirds and just seeing, right? I mean, I'll take a discount pedigree shot in a good offense, and, you know, maybe he gets healthy and we'll see. Right? I don't think that they're going to be super, committed to Isaiah Pacheco. Jerick McKinnon's a free agent, you know, and Edwards-Helaire's under contract. Again, I think he was a bad first-round pick. I wouldn't have taken him there. I thought he was, at best, like the 5th running back in that class. However, like, hasn't, from a production perspective, he's been fine. The problem is his cost. So, that's just kind of the way I would think about him. And, you know, that probably gets him another opportunity. So I don't think he's going to get his 5th-year option declined. There's no way they're going to pick that up. But I would think, you know, hey, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th round, something like that. I'm interested in that. Like, I'm interested in that more than like Devin Singletary, right? I'm interested in that more than, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson is going a little bit later than that, right? So that's an interesting bet there, right? That would be sort of how I would think about that. The last one in this tier is Antonio Gibson. And we've been kind of waiting for Antonio Gibson to be this big receiving back. His arc is fascinating. He could probably go in as a rule, right? As like a, you know, if we were to do like a cheat sheet or whatever, like player rules, he would be on the list because you watch players sort of early in their career and you sort of say, okay, like we should want more. We think we want more. Like he's been good, but there's stuff that we think he's capable of that they haven't given him. And then what happens? They start interviewing every running back who has even a sniff of being drafted in the top 100. The market doesn't move. And then they draft Brian Robinson and his price collapses. Like that should have been something we talked about in advance. It should be something that, you know, Dynasty folks should be thinking about in advance. So I would point to a couple of things with Antonio Gibson. He had a rebound in his PFF run rate this year, even though his yards per attempt were down. Again, it's a small sample size. Yards per contact were actually the lowest of his – yards after contact were the lowest of his career. Breakaway runs were actually the lowest of his career. The thing that I think you look at and you're encouraged by is the receiving production, highest yards per route run of his career, most targets with 57, 46 receptions is his most, 535 is his most, or excuse me, 353. I'm dyslexic today. 353 is his most receiving yards. So you look at that and you're probably like, that's interesting. Like that's kind of what we wanted more from him, right? You almost wanted an Eckler type role instead of it being like a Jacobs type role, which is kind of what it was to start his career. So I'm interested in that. Is they're going to use Brian Robinson as kind of the heavy and then use Antonio Gibson as the, the J.D. McKissick bigger version of that, right, which they've liked. So we'll see, right? It's going to be new offensive coordinator as well, so, you know, we'll see how all those preferences lie. I think he's probably still a – talented player that has underperformed our expectation to date based on the physical profile, the statistical profile, the receiving profile coming into the NFL. And that begs the question, why? Why is that? Can't say for certain, right? Is that he can't do it? Is it coaching staff issues? Is he going to get a fresh, clean slate? We'll have to watch for that. But this is one that has the ability to hit from deep, right? Again, he's going around Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'd probably rather take a shot on Gibson, right? Because I think his ceiling is probably higher than a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think it's probably just because I think he's a more effective player, but. You know, when you start looking at him again, he's out at the running back 38 spot. He's actually behind Brian Robinson, behind Fournette, behind Jamal Williams, Pacheco, right? He's way out there. So I would treat him as basically an injury away guy that's pretty saucy. That would be kind of the way I'd think about him. At 135 overall, so you're looking like, you know, 12th round, 13th, 14th round, something like that is probably where he becomes of value, and that's probably where you want to take him. So that would kind of be how I think about it. Start looking in that range, you know, he's attractive in that range. Then it probably starts a bunch of guys. P. Ryan's out there. Madison's even deeper. He's at 177 right now. Jalen Warren's way out there. I'm getting a little far away from the tiers here. Zamir White's at 210. That's an interesting name to sort of put out there. 236 for Rashad Penny. Again, he'll be a free agent. We'll see how that goes. But you sort of get the idea. There's a lot of uncertainty sort of in that range. I think Gibson's one where you're like, all right, you take him, right? Take him at that, and you just sort of see how this offseason plays out. So I think he has the ability to hit from deep, probably in a way that not many guys in that range do. All right, well, that'll do it here for this edition, a running back tiers as we continue to work down this series. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.